This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. Recent census data show that despite low national unemployment numbers, the poverty rate in Cincinnati rose 4.2% between 2007 and 2017 to 27.7%. Of the 81 largest cities in the U.S., only two, New Orleans and Mesa, Arizona, had greater increases in poverty. This in spite of a concerted effort to address childhood and family poverty over the last 4 years. What does this tell us about our approach? What do we need to do differently going forward? To discuss these and other questions, we are joined today by the interim chair of the Childhood Poverty Collaborative, Sister of Charity, Sister Sally Duffy, the vice president for community impact at the United Way of Greater Cincinnati, Ross Meyer, the executive director of Greenlight Cincinnati, of the Greenlight Fund, Tara Noland, and a consultant with the corporate leadership program of Chick-fil-A, Michael Calloway. Michael is from Cincinnati and was the owner of the Chick-fil-A of Western Hills until 3 months ago when he moved to the corporate headquarters in Atlanta, where he's now in a different position. To join the conversation, call 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Welcome, everybody, to Cincinnati Edition. Good to have you here today. Tara, let's begin. You wrote a letter to the editor in response to the news that came out about these numbers that I just tried to summarize, and you described it as a sharp punch in the gut. Did you have a sense that things were going in a different direction, that they were getting better, and that did this surprise you?
You know, I don't know if I was surprised as much as it just feels like a lot of people in the community have been working really hard to address this, not only in recent years, but perhaps especially in recent years. And so it was surprised perhaps a little bit, but also just feeling like, well, wait a second, what should we be looking at, and what questions should we be asking if the needle isn't moving in the way that we hoped it would be?
So for you, what's a key thing that you should think we should be asking?
Well, one thing that comes to mind for me is, do we have all of the services or programs that we need to help low-income families in our community? And so one of the things that Greenlight looks at is, are there gaps in services that could be filled with additional programming, making sure that it would be complementary to things that are already happening here? But the way that we have viewed it as, there are a lot of great things that already exist and that are currently happening, but if the needle isn't moving in the direction that we need it to, perhaps they're adding some new interventions or solutions would be useful.
Okay. Ross, whenever this topic comes up, I'm always very careful to try to point out that it's hard for any one community to buck the trend. And this is really a national trend. The growing gap in wealth, the concentration of wealth in the hands of a smaller and smaller group of people, the number of poor, that has baked into a lot of national policies. So, you know, we've got to be careful about beating ourselves up just in this city. This is a national issue. But given that, given these are national trends, why does Cincinnati seem to be at the wrong end of this, though? I mean, what is it about this community and this economy that is problematic?
Good question, Dan. So, as we all well know, this is such a complex challenge, right? And that's frankly been decades in the making. And many national forces, economic, political, certainly have significant consequence for why Cincinnati's in this situation. Yet still, we are unfortunately in a worse case than many of our peer cities. And there's frankly not one answer to that. When we have done a lot of community conversations with families who are experiencing poverty, looking at all the research as well, a couple of key issues surfaced that really pointed to why Cincinnati might be in this situation. One being public transportation. Our public transportation system simply does not connect people to where the jobs are. And that is a fundamental challenge for a lot of families. Two, affordable housing. It's a major issue. We have a projected shortage of 40,000 units of housing that's affordable to these families in Hamilton County. And so we have a lot of families that are just spending too much on housing. Three, our economy, and this reflects the nation, has fundamentally changed. And how I would frame it is, we've frankly had a hollowing out of middle-class jobs. And while our economy fortunately has many high-skill, high-wage jobs and many that employers still have a hard time filling, we have a lot lower-wage jobs, but not a lot in the middle, on the rungs on the ladder that were very accessible for generations of folks with just a high school education. Those rungs are gone. And it makes it very difficult when we have so many jobs, if it's just one wage earner, to get by. And that economic structure is not just unique to Cincinnati, really our country, really prevents a lot of challenge for families to get ahead, because the majority of the families we're talking about are working, but they're still poor.
Sally, Childhood Poverty Collaborative, over the last 4 or 5 years, however you want to say the official start, has certainly raised people's consciousness about the breadth and depth of the challenges. But what has the collaborative actually done to change things and create opportunities for people and change their lives?
Well, Dan, thank you for asking. And you know, I would add, too, we're really looking at system issues.
Those things that Ross just talked about.
We're not going to program our way out of poverty. Programs will help. It's a both and, but we also have to be looking at the systems. The childhood poverty began in November of 2015, and we spent the first 2 years trying to create the, you know, get community input, had 90 community conversations out in the neighborhoods, 2 large convenings, and heard from the people, you know, and rallied around 5 goals. And so since that time, we've been putting a lot of energy and time in policy. A lot of work went in to maintaining Medicaid expansion, for one. We're working on the SNAP situation at the moment. You know, we're also, a lot of work went on in the employer roundtable. We have had meetings quarterly with employers in terms of having them assess their turnover costs and teaching them how to do that, and ways in which they can flip those turnover costs into looking at their lower grade employees and benefiting them a little bit better. Having said that, too, we've also had a pilot with a tool that's come out of the Aspen Institute through TriHealth that is looking at supply chain. And when you put out some bids, your supply chain has to bid on certain criteria that would help us flip the system. So there, a lot of work's, you know, and Janice Urbanik and Tom Williams have been key in that work moving forward. You know, United Way, really, and Ross can speak to this more than I can, but we really have flipped the funding in terms of United Way. A lot of money was going toward poverty management, but the emphasis really has now turned to poverty reduction. Okay. And that's a different goal for a lot of organizations. The other thing I think also is we're asking organizations and corporations to ask the question, are you alleviating poverty or are you contributing to poverty in terms of your own internal processes? 72% of the jobs in our region will not lead to self-sufficiency. That means 28% do. So that's critical in terms of
the balance is all off.
I think it's important to remember, too, that these, to Ross's point, these are challenges that have been years and years in the making.
Yes.
And that this is a long game, and that we shouldn't just say everything is okay as it is. And if we just keep going and keep doing the same things, then we're going to get somewhere, because I don't think that's true. However, I think we have to be reasonable with our expectations that it's going to take a while to really create real change and to move systems and to work, to Sister Sally's point about poverty reduction or alleviation instead of poverty management. And that's newer for our community.
Michael, I want to draw you into this. You were, until you moved to Atlanta, you were an employer. You owned a Chick-fil-A franchise in Western Hills. And I know a lot about your intentions of how you wanted to use your hiring practices and whatever. What was your approach as a small business owner in terms of addressing the issues that we're raising here?
Yeah, so I think our perspective as a team in my restaurant, where we existed, we definitely were hiring adults who had the need for that employment to be provisioned or how they provided for their families. And I think a lot of Chick-fil-A's aren't always in that position where they're looking to hire team members that may not be working full-time adults, more high school or college-age students. And so we looked to make sure we had competitive wage. But we also thought it was bigger than that. It was really about taking a step back. And so I pulled on my experience of someone who was actually, you know, raised in a household that would have been considered a household that was in poverty.
You grew up in Over the Rhine, right?
Yeah, I grew up in Over the Rhine. And so it's interesting because we talk a lot about, like, families in poverty. But if you talk to a family in poverty and not just about them, I think you discover a few things. And so when I think about everything that Ross may have mentioned about transportation, affordable housing, things of that nature, oh, those were definitely conversations in my household. But what I benefited from was this idea of how do we prevent a child in poverty from becoming an adult in poverty, right? And so three things come to mind. One was an emphasis on education. That was something that was valued and was exposed to me as an opportunity to maybe change the trajectory of my life. Second thing was exposure. Seeing different lifestyles made me think about different possibilities. And then programming that was encouraging. And so I say all that to say that, you know, because of those three things, when I graduated from college, pursued college, graduated from college, I was not thinking about transportation or affordable housing. I had literally built a foundation that to some point created guardrails for me repeating generational poverty. And I think that's more of a conversation, right? Because we can talk about pulling people out of poverty, and that's going to take systems and processes. But I think another strong part of the conversation is how do we prevent poverty from being a generational conversation in some households? And so we talk about childhood poverty. Childhood poverty exists because of adult poverty, which exists because of situations and then sometimes even decisions that are made. Okay, so how do we then protect this child from repeating those same decisions? And I think I've benefited from that type of thinking. And so that's what we tried to interject within our restaurant. We did a lot of talk about wage hikes. At the end of the day, I'm not sure if a livable wage is always going to be, I guess, part of the solution for entry-level jobs that are created to be part-time employment for 15 to 18-year-olds. But we can talk about, like really development and programming for those same kids that are living in poverty, part-time jobs, to help them think beyond that current situation and hopefully make decisions where they don't repeat that cycle. And that's where a lot of our work was headed in that direction.
Okay. Of all the things that are happening right now, I mean, we can talk about the need for big changes, but the way that gets expressed is through some programs. Let me just, Tara, ask you, how is the family FII, mm-hmm. Which I'm suddenly blanking on, initiative going, Family Independence Initiative. How is that going, and are you showing the results you were expecting?
Yeah, so Greenlight helped bring FII to Cincinnati just over a year ago, and what we're really encouraged by their work with low-income families. So FII's approach is different. They trust and invest directly in families, and they believe that families who are living in poverty have as much to offer to each other and to the rest of us as any other family does. But too often we approach working with lower income families from a deficit-based model. So they flip that on its head. And what we are finding after just a year is that we've had almost 200 families participate, upwards of 500 people, adults and children who are participating, and that families, when we trust them and when we say, what is it that your family needs and how can we help? Like, tell us what you need. And is it possible that we can help get that, or that you can join with other families and help each other get that?
So what would be an example of something a family has clarified that it really would help them move things along that you've been able to help with?
So really, families are helping each other. So what we've seen is in their groups, families have identified needs like education. They've identified goals around things related to businesses or to health, and that then they're working together to support each other. So there's a really fantastic FII group called Warrior Moms that meets in Over the Rhine, and they are a lot of small business owners who are supporting each other, who are helping to build social capital with each other by swapping childcare, by helping to invest in each other's businesses. And so really what we're finding is that families then can work to move themselves out of poverty by supporting each other.
Michael, you talked about the way for you personally, education, a broadening sense of exposure, programs that, you know, sort of raised your expectations of yourself. Was that managed by your family, or was there something that intervened that changed the course for you?
Yeah, so there was a couple different points of intervention. So I would say my mom was a teen parent, so she had me at 15, and we grew up in Over the Rhine, and she would probably honestly say, hey, I made some decisions that led to this situation, but she also felt strongly that she could make some decisions that would lead us out of that situation. And so she always had a strong work ethic, was pursuing education, and part of her pursuing education was also pursuing opportunities for myself. So whether it be the Emanuel Center, the YMCA, the Boys and Girls Club, those type of outlets became the second parent and really kind of created some of those other family assets that you need to have a strong family foundation. And so I think her exposure to that programming, knowing that was available in the community, is really what got me on the right track. And from there, I was able to kind of imagine something different for myself. And then she went on to, you know, kind of complete her education after I completed mine, which I think is says a lot about even her grit and tenacity.
Well, I think that's interesting because it sounds like your mom was doing FII on her own, you know, I think that's the point of FII, that's the way families have handled it for generations. Yeah. So,
let me just jump in. As Sally knows, throughout all the community conversations, I would say one of the most recurring themes directly from families is, I do not need to be fixed.
Right.
I need opportunity, right? I need opportunity, as we all do, and we all need support along the way, right? So I love Michael's story because it really shows, and the model of the Family Independence Initiative demonstrates that everybody has dreams and aspirations. We all need support at different steps along the way, and we need access to opportunity, right? We don't need programs to fix people, but we need access to opportunity, and really thinking about the whole family is central to how United Way is working with our partners differently.
Well, let me ask this. How has this experience, going through this experience because of what's been going on for the last 3 or 4 years, how has that changed what United Way is doing?
Absolutely.
And will be doing?
Yeah, Sally mentioned this earlier, but United Way is in the midst of probably our biggest change in decades. We, for years, over 100 years, frankly, in United Ways around the country, have provided a critical safety net, right, for people who need it the most, which is absolutely necessary in investing in, you know, highly effective services that are meeting needs, right, but are meeting needs that are alleviating, I'd say, the consequences of poverty through, you know, mental health services or after-school programs or job training programs or substance abuse programs, right? Critical services, but not focused on actually moving people out of poverty for good, right? And that is a fundamental change in our approach. And we have a network of 100 of our best agency partners that are really trying to bring what they can to the table, their piece of the puzzle, but wrap it around the whole family. As Michael, you know, laid out, yes, family poverty and child poverty is about the parents and helping them get ahead educationally and through employment. But breaking the cycle long term is about better educational opportunities and exposure for the kids. And it's got to really focus on the whole family, both children and the earliest of ages if possible. And that's why all of our community's investment in early childhood education is a critical first step on that path. But we have to really focus on supporting the parents at the same time to really long term make a difference.
Sally, I'm wondering if one of the things that we've seen begin in this community is preschool promise.
Yes.
The investment in early childhood. From your perspective, where you sit with the collaborative, how important do you see that piece of this total puzzle?
Oh, I think that was critical, and that resonates with what Michael talked about in terms of education. And, you know, if we are preparing children for kindergarten, you know, we're going to see the difference in the third grade reading levels and the seventh and eighth grade math scores. So, I mean, it's critical that they're prepared to learn. And I just want to thank United Way and Ross for the leadership that they've taken in terms of really the family-centered approach, the focus on poverty reduction, and really dealing with families holistically. And Dan, an important factor in our community, 67% of single mothers are working. 67% of single mothers are working. And juggling lots of challenges.
And single mothers have a lot to juggle.
Yes.
Michael, when you talk to other owners of franchises of Chick-fil-A or other business people, what do you tell them about this area?
Yeah, so I think it's about the idea of empathy around employment. If you are going to lean into this challenge, you're going to have to understand that this workforce, this portion of the workforce, they are not going to be always traditional in their approach, and there are going to be challenges that they're working to overcome, and we have to be intentional about partnering with them, whether it be transportation, childcare. There's just a lot of things that Chick-fil-A, our culture is to care for our people, and so I think it comes more natural for us than maybe some other brands or some other employment entities. But this idea that it is not always the traditional employer-employee exchange or relationship. And when we are able to actually stretch ourselves in that direction, we see increased loyalty and higher retention. And so there is a return on that investment. And so we've been, you know, right before I left, that's one of the conversations we were having was about, hey, what would it look like for our franchises to be like an initial proving ground where employees come work for us, increase their job skills, bump up their resume, and then we can actually walk them to livable wage type jobs.
I hate to cut this off, but we're out of time. I want to thank all four of my guests today. We've just scratched the surface.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our programs are available on the website wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley.